Hi, today's July 11th, 2015. This is MoViews Podcast number 122. I'm Tato Gasso Ward, my good friend John Westfall. And today we're going to, I don't know if John agrees with me, but I'm going to title this podcast Windows Phones Long Goodbye. Although really it's not going away, it's just sort of fading off into the sunset. So earlier this week, Microsoft announced that it's restructuring. Right, and this is something it does every, 18 months or so?
Even more than that, it seems.
Yeah.
Microsoft has been restructure-happy ever since Nadella took over. So it seems like it's been every 6 months we've been hearing major shifts of this and that nature.
Yeah, so in addition to some of the executive changes that we discussed, a week or two ago, this one's pretty big because, A, they're going to reduce, lay off basically, 7,800 people, primarily in the phone business, according to the press release. And that they're going to take a write-off of $7.6 billion. So, and they say directly that, again, this is a press release. This is not some, reporter misreporting or something. $7.6 billion related to assets associated with the acquisition of Nokia devices and services business, in addition to a restructuring charge of $750 million. And I think what they paid, $7.2 billion or so for Nokia. So it's the write-off is actually larger than what they paid for the company in the first place.
Yeah, it's a pretty big write-off. And it's a very clear sign of, in my opinion, their intentions for the future moving forward with mobile. And I think you and I might be on the same page with how this works. Go ahead with your assessment and I'll give you mine.
Well, yeah, and I know there are a lot of people, I don't know how many, but certainly not within Microsoft because, those numbers are hard to equivocate over. Basically, they're going to stop, now, I can't really say that. They're going to greatly reduce the number of phones they make because they're getting rid of the hardware business. Now, people we know cautioned us to say, hey, this is only the hardware side of the phone business. It has nothing to do with the Windows, I don't even know what it's called anymore, Windows 10 Mobile?
Windows 10 for mobile, I think it's something like that.
Yeah, it was Windows 10 Phone first with a small p, and then it was Windows 10 Mobile with a big M. It's something, whatever. The phone side, the operating side of the business, which used to be Windows CE, and now I guess is getting folded over into Windows 10, goes forward. But the question is, how does it go forward with no phones actually being built by the what used to be the Nokia plants in Finland
or China? And considering that those were for quite some time and still considered the flagship Windows Phone devices were the Nokia devices.
Absolutely.
I think the most telling line in this is the statement that Nadella made, which is, quote, "We are moving from a strategy to grow a standalone phone business to a strategy to grow and create a vibrant Windows ecosystem, including our first-party device family."
Right. Now, so they want to do a Google.
Well, think about it this way. Standalone phone business is what they've been definitely doing by creating their own hardware.
Yeah.
First-party device family does not mean Windows phones. That can mean any device that Microsoft makes growing a Windows ecosystem on it. So whereas I think some of our friends and former MVP colleagues have kind of read that line to mean that the strategy is changing away from us building it to having OEMs build it, I'm reading that second part, that create a vibrant Windows ecosystem, including our first-party device family, to mean other devices we make that run Windows.
Not necessarily Windows, what used to be called Windows Phone.
Yeah, not necessarily even a phone, even, because what that basically means is we're going to take the resources that we're dumping into Windows Phone, which has only 2% of the market share.
Yeah.
And we're going to better use
2.7,
those
2.7, John.
2.7. Oh, yes, 2.7.
Don't forget
we're going
2.7.
To better use those resources with tablets, with, smaller netbook, not netbook devices per se. That's an old term. But, it's not going to be that we're going to be releasing Windows Phone. I think this is the beginning of the end as well. This is not just we're getting out of the hardware game, but everyone else stay in it because it'll be really awesome. This is we're getting out of the hardware game and we're going to use the very bright people we have to create apps that either work on our first-party devices, so the Surface tablets, or we're going to use them for mobile technology that's going to roll out to Android and iOS.
Yeah, you know, I tend to agree with you. I happen to think that Windows Phone will have at least one more iteration. So I think we'll see something going into 2016. But after 2016, I think if that market share doesn't pop over, let's say, 4%, I have a hard time believing that there's going to be a Windows Phone in 2017 or maybe 2018. Or it might be a completely different animal. And one of the animals that I hypothesize that might arise from the ashes of Windows Mobile, Windows Phone, in my Extreme Tech article, is that maybe they're going to go with a Wi-Fi solution, you know, kind of like Google Fi, where they have, you know, they already have that Microsoft Wi-Fi app where you search for, you pay to get access to Wi-Fi connections. So, you know, how hard is it to move from a paid Wi-Fi network to paid Wi-Fi plus VoIP network using Skype, you know, with Skype out so you can make phone calls to conventional, you know, plain old telephone system type phones?
Yeah, that's a possibility, but I'm looking at this from a perspective of they're already making excellent software for iOS and Android.
That's true, I agree.
They're getting paid much more for Android than they are for Windows Phone right now.
Yeah.
And so you're going to hang your hat hoping to get 4 or 5%. 4 or 5% still isn't good either.
No.
And even if you start to see a shift toward an uptick, there's not enough of a track record to say that that's the beginning of a resurgence when, you know, your competitors are getting quite a bit more market share than that. I mean, it's not like there are 40 different mobile phone operating systems out there and Windows Phone and a handful of others are in the sub 15%. There's really two big players out there. And if you can't grab 20, 30, 40% of a market share, you're not making money in mobile phone.
Unless you're Apple, which has about 18% of market share and is making money hand over fist.
That is true, but Apple has found unique ways to have a more valuable product than an Android device maker would.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I would ask people to think about is that, you know, with these Nokia plants being shuttered, The Lumia line, manufactured and owned by Microsoft, accounted for at least 90%, probably more, of all Windows phones being sold in the last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, assuming they're not making that many phones anymore, because it's pretty hard to make a lot of phones when you're shuttering all your plants.
Yes, and when you're dumping that much. I mean, this is not... So at the beginning, you said 7,800. I want to make sure people heard that that's 7,800, not 7 or 800.
That's correct.
That is a lot more people
it
than...
It is a lot of people.
Just, okay, we're going to shutter some of the plants and maybe go into low production. And think about it this way. If you get rid of all of those assets and then you do see a resurgence, you're going to spend a lot more money in retooling to get back up and running. There is, I don't think, any delusion on Microsoft's side that they're going to bounce back as a first-party device maker.
Yeah.
Maybe they've got some sweetheart deals worked out with LG and some of the other OEMs to create devices that were just as good as the Nokia line. But, yeah, I don't know. It just rubs me as the beginning of the long goodbye.
Yeah, and Mary Jo Foley from ZDNet, allaboutmicrosoft.com, in the most recent Windows Weekly, which was recorded a few days ago, said that she reached out to Microsoft and asked them what that strategy actually meant. Were they going to continue manufacturing their own phones? Or, as you suggest, you know, either go to third party or get some OEM to create a Lumia brand phone. And basically, they didn't answer her.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, because I don't, like I said, I'm reading that including our first party device family line to be a very careful way of Nadella saying, oh, you thought that meant phone? We meant other things that run Windows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, I hate to say it, we have a lot of friends who really love the Windows Phone product, and it is a solid product.
It is.
If you need what it offers, but if you are one of, I guess, the 97.3% of other users that see other value in the other platforms, you just can't survive with only 2.7%.
Yeah, and it's a real shame because, you know, when I wrote the article for ExtremeTech.com a couple of days ago that I called Microsoft Windows Phone, a 20-year retrospective of a meandering mobile strategy, one of the things, you know, I came up with when my research, looking back, because, you know, you and I remember back when we were very much Windows mobile enthusiasts. Mm-hmm. In 2009, the Windows mobile smartphone, both the standard edition and then I guess they called it a pro edition. I can't remember what we called it anymore. But had almost 10% of the market share of smartphones. I mean, it was a significant market share. And that was down from, I think, about 18 or 20%, which is essentially what Apple has now. So
yeah, and it was still being advertised heavily. Yep. In its previous iteration, you know, obviously saw a big advertising push for Windows Phone as recently as last summer, but we haven't seen anything since.
Right. Nor have we seen a flagship phone, which a lot of enthusiasts have been grumbling about. You know, I mean, enthusiasts want the best phone they can possibly get for, you know, whatever it is they have. Now, Apple makes it easy because they only have two phones.
Exactly.
So you get the best, you know, just depending on whether you want the big one or the smaller one. Yeah. On the Android side, you know, Samsung and LG, and then the rebranded Nexus phones are, you know, you could arguably call them the flagship. In fact, not arguably, they are the flagship phones. Yep. Right? There are various. You may say the Nexus 6 is not a great phone, but still, that's their flagship for the Nexus line. And if you don't like it, go to Samsung or go to LG. Mm-hmm. But there's no option for that. There hasn't been an option for Windows Phone enthusiasts for 18 months. And I think that's got to be kind of frustrating if you're a fan of that platform and you want the best and greatest for, you know, doing the things you do every day with it.
I, you know, it would be a worthwhile thing for us to reach out to some of our friends and say what, you know, honestly, not in a forum where others are going to see it as a sign of geek weakness.
Right, right.
But do you have an exit strategy right now? Because as a hardcore adopter of this platform, which you and I were for so long, this would, I think, give anyone reason to pause and right. say, huh, well, I've been waiting for a new hero device, in a sense, for the last 18 months. I don't think I'm going to get a Nokia hero device now that they're shutting down the plants. I don't think there's still an R&D division that's saying, look, we're going to have one last great device to ride out into the sunset on. I think and this is, of course, the public announcement. This could have been decided 6 months ago, 12 months ago.
And you know, you bring up an interesting point that I still haven't figured out. It's okay, we were told, you know, by folks who care about this stuff a lot more than we do, and I care about it a lot, but there are people who care about it a lot more than we do, right?
Yes,
the users of
definitely.
The phones, they invested in it, you know, emotionally and intellectually and as a user. You know, they say, well, you know, the Windows Phone operating system is going to continue. Yeah, okay. But who's designing the hardware? I mean, which we brought up earlier. Now, you know, whatever you might think about the Windows Phone operating system, and I happen to think it's pretty good, even though I don't use it anymore, is that the Nokia engineers that were brought over Microsoft are awfully good. I mean, they did some groundbreaking stuff in at least camera technology and, you know, other aspects of a smartphone that unfortunately never became really widely known because people weren't buying it, and, you know, in the way that Android phone and iPhones. But they did some really great stuff in terms of hardware. Are those people among the 7,800 people being laid off, or are some of those hardware engineers in Finland going to be retained somehow to, if not actually build new Lumias, at least reference phones for other manufacturers to use as the basis for their own design?
I mean, I guess the question is, how many do you need? Did they need in the first place? And 7,800 doesn't seem like a small number of like a portion of a team. It seems like a whole team.
Yeah, and this is on top of what, 15,000 that were laid off last year?
Yeah, last June. So we're about a year and a month away from that massive layoff where there were cuts in, you know, some of the sacred areas. That was when guys from the Windows development team were getting walked out the door. So. Yeah. There's definitely a big shift going on, and I just don't see, unless your brand is Surface, Surface seems to be where, you know, we're, and so for all we know, anyone who was kept on is getting thrown over to Surface, and the next version of the Surface will have a cell radio built into it and can act as a phone or something like that.
You know, and honestly, a giant phablet, you know, let's say a 7-inch Microsoft Surface phone that is, you know, say an iPad mini size that can also act as a voice phone, would be a winner, I think. I think a lot of people would like that. I mean, with Bluetooth headsets and stuff, you don't need to hold a device up to your head to have a phone call, right? And most people don't. So, you know, why bother with something that you have to have in your hand? You know, just activate it with your Microsoft Band to answer it, and, you know, you start talking on your headset. I think that'd be great. Because, quite honestly, I always have a problem clicking on a call on my headset. I always either miss the button, especially when I change headsets, and, you know, it's kind of in a different place. It's never been great. But, you know, if you get a call, say, and you can answer it in your Microsoft Band, answer in terms of saying, yeah, I want to take it, boom, click, tap your Microsoft Band, or say, okay, and your headset activates and you're on the phone, why do you need a, you know, one-handable phone? I think it'd be pretty cool.
If Microsoft's idea is, okay, Apple has decided that you need three devices, tablet, a phone, and a computer.
Yeah.
We've decided you need one device, a Surface tablet, which turns into a computer, and then using a Microsoft Band and a Bluetooth headset, it's your phone.
Yeah, I think it'd
that
be awesome.
Could be a great device that would just, you'd put it in your bag or you'd have it in your home, and One thing that you mentioned earlier that I decided to go look up a few stats on, I found an article by Paul Thurrott earlier this year. The Windows Phone devices in the world, there are about 80 or about 79% of all the devices out there are Nokias in some way, one of the Nokia Lumias.
I believe it. And it's so, and a vast majority of those are the low-end Windows phones.
Yeah, so you're looking at 21% of the Windows phones left are the ones that are going to be still out there. Think about if you're an OEM. Are you going to put money into this platform that the your own creator of the platform has said, you know what, there's not money to be made in the devices here, so we're getting out of it. But you guys have at it.
It's a hard call, and it all depends on what Microsoft really intends to do. I mean, a lot of people are saying that Microsoft can't get out of the mobile business. I don't know if that's true. Like you said earlier, they've been doing an awful good job with software for other platforms. And they do make money from Android, so it's not they're totally out. They're still making money from Android.
They're making more money doing other things. They can basically, you know, think about it this way. When they started putting Office on iOS, they charged for it.
Yep.
And then apparently they made enough money doing other things that they decided, let's open it up. Yeah. And so they took away a lot of the price restriction. To me, that means they're either getting money on the Office 365 subs, or they've got enough from Android to subsidize iOS development.
Yeah,
and their goal is just getting you back to Office instead of using Google Docs or Pages.
Yeah, you know, interestingly though, and I haven't done the side by side comparison to figure out what's going on, but the recent Microsoft Office for Android phones release is free, like you said, but actually requires Office 365 for several important functions, I think like review mode or something. And I'm not sure that's true for the iOS version. I think you can get review mode without paying for Office 365.
Yeah, because we did that a couple weeks ago. I opened up a document on my iPad, and I had my review notes in there and everything.
So, you know, maybe they want to, because Android users are notoriously less likely to actually buy stuff than iOS users. Perhaps that's their way to entice them or encourage them to actually pay for Office 365 for $99 a year for the, you know, the 5-copy, or what, $69 a year for a single copy. But in any case, you know, they make a ton of money off of Office 365, so that might be a good strategy. I should say that, you know, and I think I can speak for you on this. We are not gleeful or chortling or anything at this news. As longtime fans of this platform, although we haven't used it recently, at least I haven't used it since about 2012, I think, I'm sad to see it go. You know, I was a huge fan of the Windows CE handheld PC and the Pocket PC and the early smartphones, especially the Pocket PC Phone Edition, a few that followed after that. That, you know, I thought it was a winning platform back then. I still think it was. It was head and shoulders above anything else that was available in the market for me as a person that wanted what, you know, what was became known as a smartphone. And I'm sad to see a decent third alternative. It's not disappearing, as people keep cautioning us to say. It's, you know, but certainly it's fading somehow. It's going to be harder to find if Microsoft isn't making as many of those. They're going to make something. We just don't know how. Mm-hmm. If it's a OEM or something.
I mean, in the interest of full disclosure, we were quite avid Windows Phone enthusiasts. Oh, yeah. And then the team took a kind of new approach to how they wanted to view the MVPs. And a lot of us found ourselves where our input was no longer requested. And yeah. So that kind of leaves a little bit of a sour taste in your mouth. But you're right. Even after, you know, I was an MVP, I was still writing about Windows Phone.
I was still using it. Yep.
Yeah, and I felt it was a good product. I didn't feel like it was the product for me. I switched away from it, and I was on Android for a while. I'm on iOS now. But I felt like it was a decent product. And certainly talking to our friends who are still, almost in the evangelist center of Windows Phone, they still believe it's a good product.
Yep.
And
I can
they're very passionate
why.
About it.
Yep.
And so, yeah, I don't take any joy in this news, but I do, in a way, sense that this was something that the writing has been on the wall for a while on. Even when the Nokia acquisition was announced, people were kind of scratching their heads going, okay, so Google bought Motorola. I guess Microsoft had to go out and buy someone, too. And we saw how that worked out for Google with Motorola, and
it worked out
the same way with Microsoft for Nokia.
New software hardware partnership lasted long, was very fruitful.
Yeah,
unfortunately, and you know the problem I had, by the way, was not so much the whole MVP mess, which I still do consider a mess the way it was handled, but when they told everybody, and I don't mean us as former MVPs, but the public, the Windows Phone population, hey, you know, when you switch from Windows Mobile 6X to Windows Phone 7, you know all those apps you love? Yeah, never mind.
Oh, yeah, we forget that Windows Mobile had a huge app ecosystem.
It did.
You know, it wasn't all nicely unified in a store. It wasn't, you know, as that's what Microsoft wanted to do in the 6.x was get a store up and get devices, get software in there. But there was a, you know, if you wanted software to do pretty much anything, you had it.
Yeah.
But that was in a different era when it wasn't App Store-esque. It was, you know, little development houses that had a really cool app that did some really cool things, and people found the installer and installed it directly. And
Or what we now call side-loading.
Yes, side-loading.
The other thing is that, as you said, most of these developers are small ones, and I don't even know what happened to them after this, but I assume they're making a decent living, because some of them, like Ilium Software, one of my favorite software houses from that era, they were around since the mid-1990s, making some really top-notch software, one of which I still use on iOS, even though Ilium hasn't updated it in years. And they were charging reasonable amounts. These were not 99 cents app. They were charging $10, $20, $30 per app. Mm-hmm. Some people were charging $50 for like a GPS app or databases and things like that. So people were making, you know, not hundreds of dollars per sale, but they're making more than, you know, 70 cents per sale. And so, you know, I don't know if they any of them got rich, but there is enough to stay in business and pay their mortgage and that kind of stuff. And hey, that's all you really want to really, at the least, that's all you want to ask as a developer, that I want to make a living wage out of, you know, the work I love and perform.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those software houses that are still around today, unfortunately, are ghosts of their previous size.
Yeah.
I think that was just what they ended up having to do, was cut down. And if they're still around, they're making software, but they're not a development team of 20 or 30 developers and marketing and all that. It's 5 to 10.
Yeah, or less.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, maybe that's one of the things we should do one of these days, and look up some of our old favorites, like whatever happened to Ilium, whatever happened to SBB Software. You know, there are a whole bunch of companies that I had very high regard for, and I haven't heard from them or of them in years now, and I hope they're doing okay somehow, maybe under a new name or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking up. So you mentioned SPB.
Yeah.
It seems like SPB has gone on and they refocused themselves into search engine. That, you really? Know, according to the great source of Wikipedia, SPB Software, a division of Yandex, the leading Russian IT company which operates the largest search engine in Russia, develops mobile solutions for OEM mobile device manufacturers. So they were bought up by a larger fish, and they're still working, but they're working directly with OEMs, it looks like.
Okay, which does happen. I remember one of my old favorite companies, in terms of the products they produce, is B-Square, if you remember them. They're developing some really great software, I think even some hardware at one point. I think they did a Windows CE phone that I recall. Somebody bought them, might have been even Microsoft, I can't remember anymore. But they kind of just, you know, went away. I don't know if they got absorbed in Microsoft or some other larger entity, but I do remember they were sold to somebody, maybe even Intel.
Yeah. I think that's what kind of happened to all these groups, was that they got sold off and are living on in some incarnation doing something specific now. So it's no longer little independent software houses.
Yeah, which is a shame. You know, the dream of the garage success, you know, like the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world with Facebook, where you take an idea from literally nothing and make billions. Now, not everybody did that, but hey, a lot of people made a decent living for a number of years, even if they didn't become a gigantic company like Facebook. Mm-hmm. So it's a shame we don't really see that side of it as much. Even in iOS, you know, it's really big companies producing software now that you see in the top parts of the charts. Every now and then there'll be something like Snapchat or something, but it's becoming rarer and rarer to see sort of a, you know, 2-3 person garage startup and make it huge anymore.
Very true. So I guess we can wrap up this topic by saying I think we're both in agreement that this is not boding well for Windows Phone as an operating system. You know, it might become Windows Phone components show up other places. I think there's some excellent ideas in that platform that might show up. You know, things like Cortana and some of the other things that they've built, those might just show up on iOS and Android, especially, you know, Android, where Microsoft still makes money.
And, you know, as a Microsoft Windows 10 beta user, you know, I've been testing it in a Dell Venue 8 Pro tablet, essentially. I would love to see a 7 or 8 inch Surface tablet running full Windows 10 with a phone built in. And before people in the U.S. poo-poo that idea, you know, in other countries, primarily South Korea, I don't know if it's still there, but there was at one point, I remember seeing videos from South Korea of people using a Samsung Galaxy Tab tablet, you know, like an 8-inch tablet, and they weren't holding up their head, of course, but, you know, they had a Bluetooth phone, they were answering calls and making calls, I mean, not Skype kind of calls, regular phone calls on, you know, the plain old telephone system network. So, you know, some people adopted it. I don't know how prevalent it is now, but although we never saw those, you know, GSM or CDMA-based tablets in the U.S., at least I haven't, they were available in other parts of the world, and people were buying and using them. So, yeah.
You know, I think Microsoft could have a really nice strategy of one device. You've got one device that's your laptop, your tablet, and your phone. You've got a Microsoft Band that you bought for $99 instead of $199, and it is got a little built-in microphone and speaker.
Yep.
You know, so a Band 2.0. You wear that around your house. That's what you pick up calls on, what you answer calls on. You can also use a Bluetooth headset with it. And, yeah, you don't carry around a little phone. You just carry around your Surface, which is small enough that it fits into most bags. And, yeah, you're good with that.
Or if they want to turn Skype into a real phone company, and I don't
they could do that, too.
You know, if Google can create Google Fi, Why not a Microsoft Skype company and have a Skype-branded tablet that is a phone?
Mm-hmm.
By the way, speaking of it's not on our show notes, but Google Fi, I'm really annoyed. So, you know,
I've seen your annoyed posts about Google Fi.
I did receive an invitation to become a customer of Google Fi a number of weeks ago, but I had to let it just sit. Because it turns out that after speaking to a Google support person, he verified to me that if I switched over, I would destroy my Google Voice account completely. I mean, as in not the number would disappear. People couldn't send me text messages. I wouldn't be able to retrieve old ones, you know, just gone. And that wasn't going to work for me. So I created a second Google account and sent, which is what we I discussed with the Google support person, and he said, "Oh, it won't take very long for you to get another invitation." Well, I recently got a update on my request just a few days ago that says, "Expect your account to be processed in more than 12 weeks."
That's not very long.
Which, let's see. Let's do the math. 12 divided by 4. That's about 3 months, right? So. Which is okay. You know, it's too bad. I was kind of planning on switching from T-Mobile to Google Fi. Google Fi actually uses T-Mobile for half of its network. Sprint is the other half. So, I wouldn't get any coverage difference. In fact, it should be a little bit better since it'd be Sprint and T-Mobile. But anyway, that's my rant on Google Fi. I don't really know what the holdup is, except maybe they're being extra cautious in how they grow the network, which is pretty smart in my opinion. But, what the heck? I need to replace my Nexus 4, guys. Its battery is not lasting even half a day anymore. So, I have to carry a battery charger to charge up at lunch now these days. So, please give me my Google Fi account for my second account so I can get a new phone. Because only Nexus 6 works on the Google Fi network. Okay, so next up is actually another Windows topic, and that's Windows 10, which will launch kind of sort of on July 29th, just in, 2 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. Build 10,166 was released a couple of days ago on June 9th. What was that, Thursday? It hit my tablet last night, June 10th. Really haven't played with it, although the release notes said it was mostly bug fixes and stabilization, so there shouldn't be anything actually new to see. But I have to say it is pretty stable. A lot of the things that I was grumbling about in articles and on podcasts, like Wi-Fi instability and critical errors that were crashing my system, those have been gone, knock on wood, since the last couple of releases. So I'm a lot happier camper now, and I'm looking forward to Windows 10 appearing on my various Windows 7 and Windows 8 devices over, next couple of weeks in late July and early August.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any Windows boxes left, John?
I just have virtual machines. I have one Windows 7 box that I boot up occasionally. Mm. So I have not gotten anything that I've updated or played around with. But I know that you have, and I'm glad that you've had sort of the better experience as time has gone on.
Yeah.
Well, I can only imagine how many bugs there are in Windows 10 for phone, especially with all those people being laid off.
Right. Although, the people who fix the bugs for Windows 10 mobile, whatever it's called, they're still employed, right? That's the platform side. So,
yeah,
the website, they are there. We were told that they are there and still working. So, but I do believe that Windows 10 mobile will be released after Windows 10 for desktop. So, it mm-hmm. will not see the light of day on, at least in production form, I should say, on mm-hmm. July 29th, along with the desktop and notebook and tablet group. You might want to try the tablets, by the way.
I've thought about it. Yeah. I really have. It's been a temptation continually to try the tablets. Yeah. So.
I would recommend not buying a small one, though. Mm-hmm. Get at least a 10-inch tablet. And it's because I found that the 8-inch Dell Venue 8 Pro, basically everything is too small for me to tap. Mm-hmm. So I have to use a stylus or a mouse, which is kind of ironic on a tablet. and that's also mostly because there's not very many appealing modern UI or Microsoft Store apps or whatever they call it, but the tiled stuff. I uninstalled Netflix and Skype and Facebook and Twitter, I think, Metro styled, and went back to the desktop because they were just so unappealing and in some cases less functional.
Mm-hmm.
So not a good story on that either. And I'm glad Windows 10 is bringing back a lot of the Windows 7-ish kind of UIs for those of us who are basically going to stay in the desktop for the foreseeable future.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how the rollout is. I think we're going to be on hiatus for a couple of weeks of podcasts. So probably the next time we talk, we'll see how the rollout went. So.
Yeah, I think we can talk. I'm going to be going to a conference. This is Todd. I'm going to on a conference trip that's going to be a week long. But I think we might be able to squeeze one in on next Saturday. I'll let you know what my schedule's like, if you can let me know what your schedule's like. But the following Saturday might be possible, actually, depending on, how sleepy I am after I get off the plane. Because then I return the following Saturday early afternoon. So it's actually possible.
We shall have to see. We will see what we talk about and when we can talk about it.
Yeah. And finally, And finally,
I am very interested in this last topic.
Okay, and finally, I have rejoined the cool kids because I have an actual smartwatch. After a long hiatus, after the death of Microsoft Spot Service, and I turned off my Sun 2 and 3i for the final time in, what was it, early 2012, I think? January 2012. So I have been watchless for 2.5 years. I literally have not worn a watch.
You have not known the time.
No.
For so long.
No, I have to look at my phone, you know, like a, like an animal. But I when Motorola reduced the retail price of the Moto 360 to $150, where did it start at? Like $350, $300? It was kind of expensive.
Yeah, it was pretty high.
Yeah, it was kind of like Apple Watch, pre-Apple Watch. And I just, well, that's just way too expensive for me to, you know, to gamble on something I'm not sure I would really get a lot of value out of. But at $150 and having seen the kind of value that you've gotten with the Apple Watch and the Pebble, and other, so I know some other people with Pebbles and that sort of thing, said, you know what, at $150, this becomes still expensive, but, you know, I'd prefer it to be $99, but I could take a gamble on it. And so I received my Moto 360 yesterday on Friday, and it needed two updates because I guess I got one of the older stock, you know, things that have been sitting in stock for a while. I know our friend Sven Johansson, who was on the podcast with us, what, last week? Said that he also received his Moto, but he, instead of ordering from Amazon like I did, ordered directly from Motorola, and he only had to install one update. So, you know, he probably had something that had not been sitting on the shelf as quite as long. Mm-hmm. But I updated it, and I've been, so I'm using it all day today, not heavily. You know, mostly it's just a watch and getting notifications, things. Really haven't tried to use the map because I don't know how to use maps on this yet other than to look at it. So I haven't tried to have it tell me, you know, turn left or right. I don't know how that works yet. But I will, since I do have a trip coming up, I will use it. It does have a heart rate monitor, and I don't know if it's, I'm just excited to have it, but my heart rate is a little high. I don't know if that's something I should worry about, if it's just an error. I have been getting some notifications from, like, you know, Facebook and email and calendar and that sort of thing. So I have to say, so far, it's been pretty useful because, as an experiment, I usually keep a phone near the computer when we're doing these podcasts. I can look things up. You know, like the next thing I have to do, like I have to go to the airport in a little while to go pick up some people, my family.
But just some people.
Yeah.
Just random.
Random people that, you know.
That's Todd's side hobby. He just picks up random people at the...
like Uber.
Airport, yeah, and just takes them places. But he doesn't even charge them. Yeah. You know, it's a fun hobby.
So, but I kind of like it so far. I don't understand the UI yet completely. So you swipe from right to left to dismiss a card. You swipe up to see other cards and things, but I'm not sure which one I'm going to see anytime I swipe up. Like right now I'm getting a Facebook notification. So if I swipe up, obviously somebody's commented on a photo I posted there. And if I swipe up again, it shows me I need to go to the airport, you know, be there by 5:30, that sort of thing. And I swipe up one more time, it says heart rate, 87% active. I'm not actually wearing my watch. So I'm not sure how it knows that. and it shows the oppressive weather we're having. It's 86 degrees with unbelievable humidity right now. So it feels like 90-something, maybe 100 degrees. It's not a comfortable... And then now I don't exactly know how to get back to my watch. Okay, I had to just swipe down a couple of times. But I like it a lot. I chose this watch face that apparently was the winner of some competition for watch faces. That happened to like... I'm going to show it to John so he can kind of see it.
That is a nice watch face. You're making me jealous because that is the one thing that I wish I had on my Apple Watch more would be nice, cool watch faces like that.
Yeah. Well, of course, I don't have a Mickey Mouse watch face. And I'm a, you know,
that's true.
I'm a huge Disney fan, so I actually would like that. but on the other hand, I paid $150 versus, you know, a $400. Because I don't think I would have bought the 38mm. I wouldn't have gotten the one you got. And that's $400 minimum, right? That's just for the... sports model with the default wristband.
And looking at the price history for Moto 360s, they were around $250 when they came out.
Okay, so it wasn't that high, but I still thought $250 was more than I was willing to pay. $250 is more than I've paid for any watch ever, by the way. Prior to... this is now the most expensive watch I've ever bought at $150. I think I got the Sun 2 on sale for like $120 or something. So, you know, it was a very good price. It was a very... reasonable price for the time.
Mm-hmm.
So at $150, I've still not paid, you know, an Apple Watch price ever in my whole life. I'm not a fancy person, you know. I don't wear jewelry, and I consider watches to be jewelry for the most part.
But, I am a very fancy person.
Indeed, you are. You have a fancy Apple Watch.
Yes, I'm very fancy.
But you know, I've only been actually using it, like I said, today. Since yesterday, it was basically updating all the time. And as it turns out, you have to have 80% battery before it'll actually update the software. Which is reasonable, right? You don't want the update to crash because the battery ran out. So I'd have to keep it in the charging stand while it was updating. And it takes a long time for it to download and then to decide that it has enough battery despite being on the charging stand to actually perform the upgrade. And then it asks if you want to. So if you're not looking, it's just kind of sitting there. Do you want to update? Hello, hello, do you want to update? Instead of just doing it. But I guess that's okay. It's any rate, so I'm glad I have it. I'm hoping to make good use of it on my little trip in a while. And I am a little concerned about the battery because I think I'm at like 50% battery, and I think I took it off the charging stand around 8 a.m. this morning. So right now it's almost 5 p.m. So it's been less than 12 hours, and it's, you know, it's down to about 50%, 48%, something like that. You can't actually see the charge level on the watch. I'd have to go grab my phone to see what the charge level is on this.
That's an interesting limitation. One of the things that we didn't talk about too much last week that I'm hoping you can tell me a bit more about as you use the Moto 360 is the app story. Because I was under the impression that there was a pretty good app ecosystem, and from what I've been told, that's not the case. So
yeah,
I'll be curious to see what apps or what you're able to do with it other than just time-related functions.
Yeah, I've been looking through the apps, and I'm not quite sure. I've seen, and there's some games and things like that. I'm not sure if they're, but it's not clear to me at the moment if it's more like the Apple situation where really you're installing apps on your phone that then transfer something or other to your watch. I mean, that's been the case so far. So, for example, if I look at my phone right now, as I am, let's see, click and hold, I think, is what I got to do. Yeah, there we go. So I have Google Maps on it, which somehow talks to my watch. I have Agenda, which is, you know, basically the calendar. Alarm. I have Amazon. I'm not sure. I didn't install this app, so I assume this is really my phone talking to it, and it's a one-click only purchase, by the way, so really dangerous. I think I might disable it. I really don't want to have to do a one-click on my watch.
There was a story when the Apple Watch dropped that someone accidentally did a one-click and bought an Xbox 360 or something while they were demoing the Amazon app.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, you do not want to do that.
Yeah, there's Google Keep. And then I read one review just before my watch arrived saying to disable Google Fit right away because it will annoy the heck out of you. And I think that's also true of Apple, right? Some of the health things where it tells you to stand up because you've been sitting too long are kind of annoying, especially if you're in a meeting.
It can be. I haven't found them annoying, but I know that it is able to be disabled simply because some might find it to be frustrating.
But I will say, as an inexperienced Google Wear owner, you know, less than 24 hours now, essentially, I did go looking for apps, and you know, there is a Google Wear section. It's not clear to me what it is I'm looking at, even when I'm in that section. And then I really didn't see anything all that compelling. You know, I no longer use Foursquare, as you know, or Swarm, or any of those things. That might be interesting if I still did. I should maybe look at it just to see how it works. I am a little bit worried that it's going to kill my phone battery if I use my watch too much. And my phone battery, as I said, is already dying at, you know, it's already down to like 50% at lunchtime. Actually, less than 50% at lunchtime. So I'm always having to charge it. I should also say the iPhone, which is my primary phone for everything except voice, it's normally at about, I don't know, 75 to 90% by lunchtime. So its battery is phenomenal. It's also a newer phone, so that might help. But in any case, so John and I will figure out what our plans are for the next couple of weeks as I travel to a conference, and we will probably do at least one podcast in the next 2 weeks, maybe two. But and of course your schedule also, John, you know, whatever, however it works out for you. But in any case, this has been Mobile Views podcast number 122, Windows Phone Long Goodbye. It is not gone, but it seems to be fading into the sunset, at least parts of it, the hardware side of it.
And it will not be forgotten when it is gone.
No. And I think John and I both hope that Microsoft does have some kind of a workable mobile strategy that includes voice communication, like a Surface phone or Surface tablet with Skype or something. Because I think they really do need that part of the ecosystem. I think they can be successful at just, and I use that in quotes, just producing software for Android and iOS. But that doesn't seem to me, at least not the Gates Ballmer Microsoft. You know, Nadella has a whole different view on things, which I kind of like. I'm really impressed by what he's been able to do with the company since he became CEO. Not that he cares what I think, but, you know, that's my opinion.
He cares deeply.
And I'm looking forward to seeing what he decides to do with this whole mobile business. Because I actually agree with folks that say Microsoft needs to have some kind of mobile solution, more than just apps. They need to have some kind of mobile solution that people can touch and feel and say, this is Microsoft. But Windows Phone does not appear to be that thing, at least not in its current version. So we'll see. Maybe Windows Phone, whatever they call it next year, because they change names every time. And that's the other problem is branding. Microsoft does not understand mobile branding. We should count the number of names they've had for Windows, handheld type devices, Windows CE, handheld PC, handheld Pro, handheld Smart Edition, Smartphone Edition, Pocket PC Phone Edition, Windows Mobile Phone Edition. They can't hang on to brand, and that is, I think, one of the big problems. In any case, Mobile Views Podcast 122, I'm Todd Agosaw, my good friend John Westfall,